Hello, everyone, and welcome to the American Scouser Podcast. Another Monday night, we are back in action after kind of like a crazy weekend over here, but a lot to talk about. I am your host, as always, Timuchin, here in cool, breezy, but nice for March Chicago. And with us, the usual gang is here. Gally, what's happening?
Extremely windy, but, you know, there's not too much of a complaint when there's not snow on the ground in March. And kicking off St. Patrick's Day week here in Massachusetts, which is usually a crazy time in Massachusetts.
Is because you have a lot of Irish heritage, obviously, right?
Yeah, I'm 50-50 Irish-Italian. My mom is, at least, and my father's also Irish. But my uncles are in Irish bands. They do, like, shows. It's a crazy time. We also, Holyoke, Massachusetts, is like the second largest St. Patrick's Day parade, literally to like the city of Chicago. And this is just like little old Holyoke. So like they do a crazy road race, a crazy festival the day before where they shut down the city. So it's a good time up here. So hopefully the rain, the snow holds out this week, and it's just good times, good sailing.
And Bickler doesn't need an excuse to party or be Irish or anything like that. But Bickler, I can easily say there is 0%, I think, Irish in me. But Bickler, what do you got going there? What is your percentage?
So, a fun fact, I was adopted early on, so I have very limited knowledge other than the fact that I actually have a little bit of Greek somewhere in there. Don't tell Matush this, but mom's side was German Polish, so
yeah, you might have just found out. unfortunately, you might have just found that a little bit of Greek, huh?
Yep,
really? That's interesting. I did not know that.
Well, I am like short and round and somewhat loud, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I know Layla, now that she goes to school in the city and stays in the city. There you go. See? It's like the Batman signal. It's like a big Polish flag, and they're like, Matusz.
Matty Cash kit coming in.
I was just going to say, Matty Cash came rolling in. The Polish flag went up. Matty Cash came through the dough.
I'm sure you guys both have like Matty Cash jerseys that you guys wear and hang out together. But yeah, I know, like I say, Layla is like really looking forward to the Chicago festivities, because I mean, not as obviously as big as Odway you're at, Gally, but it's like a huge thing in Chicago as well, the Green River and all that kind of stuff. So should be interesting, but not as interesting as trivia, people, which is the favorite segment of it. So he says wife is Irish, my father-in-law is James Burke. Let's go with that. Okay, I'll leave that. I'll let that float around over there. Okay, so this is like a tricky one. So let's listen carefully.
I'm going to need an interactive background or something to define that on the next pre-match show. Okay?
Siri, okay. What is James?
Exactly. No, I'm afraid that answer will get read over the air and will be banned.
Oh, I guess, yeah, I have no idea. Like,
yes. Oh, yes. Oh, that's well played, actually. Now that he says that, that's a really good line.
Yes, it, well played. Impressed. It's just totally why James Burke is the trivia, says Matush. Yes, it did end up being. Who is James Burke? Okay, here's the actual trivia that's Liverpool related, not James Burke related. This is actually a good one. He did send a couple of other ones that are slightly easier, maybe, but I thought this was an interesting one. Okay, here's the one we're going with. With Bradley, Elliott, and Kwanzaa all starting against Manchester City, Sunday was the first time Liverpool named three players age 21 and under in their starting 11 against City. When was the last time this happened? No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to tell you when the last time this happened. It was March 2015, where we beat them 2-1 at Anfield. Who were the three players at that time who were 21 and under? 2015.
Can we do it together so we get a chance?
Sure.
Got to be. Sterling's on there.
Sterling.
Was Coutinho there? Coutinho's.
What was the age? How young?
21 and younger.
Coutinho was young when we got him from Inter, wasn't he?
But we got him.
Like 23, 24, wasn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't that young. It's definitely Gomez and Sterling. It's that third one. And Alberto Moreno wasn't there yet. Because that's the year we blow the title. That's the year we beat them and think we're going to win the title 2-1, right?
2-1, yeah. Starting 11 is the key word. So Gomez is actually not one of them.
Starting 11.
Sterling is one of them. So we're a third of the way there, guys. Two more to go. Okay, I'll give you guys tips. There are some Turkish connections involved with both these guys.
Can?
Emre Can?
It's Can, people, not Jean. Yes, Emre Can.
I thought we were better than saying Can. Place, I could have said Can. Emre Can?
Actually, you know what? Yeah, normally people say Can. That's why I think the Can threw me off more, because everybody usually says Emre Can. Markovic?
No, he wouldn't. I hope we weren't starting him.
Didn't all those guys get bought with the... Oh, this is 2015, you said. See, I'm thinking of the wrong match. So it's...
I know what Sako's Turkish connection could be, but... actually, you know what? This I'll is the one we're... off the hook over here. Because Serzi did get it. Markovic.
Really? It is Markovic.
In Turkey right now. That was the only Turkish connection there. He was a day short of 21. Raheem was just...
20. Am I thinking about the year before Coutinho scored?
Yeah, we were thinking about back when they were the 13 season when Suarez, like I was actually trying to come up with it like before when they were going for the title. That's which the one 14, I thought. 15. But that was 3-2 actually they won it. We won the comeback when Coutinho hits the curler.
Well, I remember now that you thought we were almost there and then
the slip
happens, yes.
Exactly.
But good trivia, right? That was are you not entertained in the great wars of the gladiator? No,
I will say this: I would take trivia like that at least, where it's like working out a team in the last 10 years, than asking me what the record is or the goal scoring count over the last 73 matches against the club.
So you don't like this one? How many own goals has Liverpool been gifted so far this season?
I don't know, but I'm loving your camera. Like, your camera right now is honestly one of the greatest photos of you of all time. It's just a big black box.
This is great.
You turned your whole camera off.
It feels like Tomichu is doing trivia in the Batcave.
Exactly. We basically lost the host because he was basically going to do something to probably make fun of us in the middle of trivia.
You know what?
He's going to make fun of us.
Around, and I'm back around.
Exactly.
I don't know what the hell happened there. I was wondering what you were talking about the camera. I'm like, I'm just drinking
tea. We start saying we're enjoying trivia and you just fucking leave.
Sorry. Well, do share. I would love to hear more about your guys.
Talk about can't win with you.
How many own goals? And what's the record? Wait, you know what? You guys open the can of worms. BJ sends like 100 questions over here. I'm going to send all of your guys away.
There is absolutely no transition into that.
My family would be like, how many own goals you like scored this weekend in the Premier League? Please. I don't know. I'll just make up numbers.
So far this season, and what is the record in a single season? You know what?
Well, yeah, we're gonna have to work on those ones. We're gonna have to come back to him on those. It's not trivia time anymore. I think we're past that.
Well, segment. I put it right back on there, buddy. How many do you guys think this year? It's actually a lot.
Own goals total in the Premier League so far this year?
No, for Liverpool. In our favor.
Oh, how many have we scored?
Yes. Like how many have we been gifted, if you will, own goals?
This year, I'll say 6.
Bickler?
Seems high. I was gonna go 4.
Yeah, I was gonna say it does seem high now that I said it.
You wanna change your answer?
Nope.
Okay, good, because it's the correct answer. It's 6. What is the record? I was trying to reel him the other way, but that's pretty smart.
Would have been awesome if I was like 5.
I was hoping you could have like, you know what, it isn't too much. I'd be like, nope, wrong, 6. And the record actually is 7. I'll save you guys a torture. Yeah, everybody's going with 4. That's actually a lot. I don't have the full list over here, but obviously we trust BJ's numbers. Did not get an own goal this weekend, but obviously a huge game, a lot of talking points. And obviously we did talk about some of them in the post-match, some this morning as well. But... Bickler, let's start with you. What is your biggest takeaway from that game? How does Bickler, and that was your birthday, right? We, by the way, do have to sing happy birthday later on sometime during the show. Sunday was the birthday, right?
Yeah.
Or was it Saturday?
It was on Saturday.
It was Saturday. Okay, so Sunday after the game, how was the rest of your mood? What did you take away from that game?
It was fine. I mean, I guess the takeaway for me from that game is you cannot set up against a team like City, no matter how badly they are in terms of their form and personnel. You can't set up against them to win in one half. You have to go out and try to win that game across two halves. And I thought we tried to shorten the match by getting a halftime at 0-0 and make some changes and go for it. And I was just happier, honestly, that we weren't down by more than one at halftime.
Do you mean that in terms of like the starting 11 we chose? Mm-hmm. Okay. See, yep. I always felt like, I know what you're saying, and that's a valid point. I don't know if that was the thinking. If that was the thinking, yes, I agree with what you're saying. I kind of took it as more like that they couldn't give you that many minutes in terms of the pace and the energy we needed out there. You couldn't get that from like a guy like Robertson couldn't give it to you for 90 minutes. I thought that was the reason, but you might be right as well. Gally, what was your takeaway?
I mean, my takeaway was we were really, really, really good on the day as a whole. I mean, I think you take the first 20 minutes out of that match where we were not at the races and they were absolutely kind of battering us. And I think we were lucky. I think City was really, really smart. We'll talk about this later when we talk about the big calls in the second half. I think City really might have won their point when they won the coin toss and they turned us around and they made us go towards the cop end in the first half. I think it changed the whole way the second half plays out. And I understand we were dominant and rampant. I think if we're that dominant and rampant going towards the cop end, I think it's a different animal. And I think it's harder for City on all levels, especially a backup keeper. And I think it's also harder on Michael Oliver, but we'll talk about that later as well. What I think happened in this match is we didn't take our chances and we put it in the referee's hands. And when we put it in the referee's hands, it didn't end the way we want it. But we earned 3 points yesterday. We outplayed City, and we did to City what they do to every other team, which is get them out of their play, get them out of their style. We played football against City. We attacked City with possession. And we made them uncomfortable to the point, in my opinion, Pep took the best overall midfielder in the world off the pitch because he was actually a defensive liability to have out there against our rampant midfield because of what Endo and McAllister specifically were doing to them. And I think that was that like midfield
wise, that was like a crazy performance.
That was my key.
Yeah, a lot of like energy being spent to be able to do that. So it's not like, you know, the team, like, I don't know, anybody else in the league can't look at that and be like, oh, maybe be able to duplicate that. This is the way to go at it or something like that. It's just not like, you know, there's no way around it. You need a midfield. That was like a really, really good performance from that midfield. And I do agree that, you know, it was odd to me because when we talked in the pre-match, probably maybe due to like what Bickler is saying, when we saw the lineup, I was almost like okay with the draw. Maybe because of the lineup, because I felt like, you know, but at the end, Bickler, A, the chances that are mixed, and B, obviously the penalty not given, or penalties, if you will, if you want to like stretch it. Because really, the first one is probably a foul in the middle of the pitch. I know they're not going to give it in the box, which is a whole different topic we can talk about in a different day, but I feel the second one should. And I think everybody else except Kyle Walker thinks it's a penalty. So, but what is your take with the points? Like, are you content with that point? Does it feel like 2 points lost? Because that's how I feel. It's ended up feel like 2 points lost, mainly probably because of the penalty. Otherwise, I was like, oh, man, we could have taken those chances if Diaz scores. We're in good shape. But the penalty made it feel like that's 2 points lost.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I just never expect to get that call versus City, especially at the end of a match. And I mentioned this earlier with Gally, like if you've watched the Arsenal City in Liverpool matches down the stretch, if you watched all three of these teams play, it's been really clear that they're not going to take points off of them and they're not going to give points to any other team in the title race in the last minutes of a match. They just don't want to do it. They don't want to make big calls that are going to impact the title race. And the irony of that is not making a call is impacting the title race, right? And I think that's the problem is that like not making a call is a call. right? And I think I think at the end of the day, like what I really don't like about it and what really doesn't sit well with me is that, like, to me, there's a lack of these referees wanting to be accountable for outcomes in matches at all. And I think that's a real issue that I have. I mean, obviously, I think it was a penalty, you know, but we know that this is an issue. And so I think that just kind of underscores why all those missed chances that we had were so important to have that many chances and to miss that many, because we can't put it in the hands of referees who are, I don't know. I still can't wrap my mind around the fact that we're talking about Michael Oliver recently coming back from refereeing a match in the UAE, getting paid by the UAE, and then like reffing a title match where one of the teams is owned by the UAE. Like it just blows my mind that this is even a possible thing. Like just waiting for the Netflix documentary at this point.
He's reffed two matches so far in the UAE this year. The weekend after the first match, he doesn't send Kovacic off for arguably what is maybe the worst tackle not to see a red card this year in the Premier League against Arsenal in a massive match for the league. And then in this match, he doesn't call the penalty against City. Now, I want to be honest. I've said this to you guys for a few years now. I think Michael Oliver is literally a broken soul. I don't think he's ever rebounded from sending Buffon off, from calling that penalty in 4 extra minutes of stoppage time when he should have already blown the whistle, and giving Madrid a chance to take a penalty to win a Champions League tie 4-3 on aggregate that they were losing 3-0 at the Bernabeu that go to extra time. And then he sends the keeper off. And if everyone doesn't remember, they couldn't bring on a backup keeper. A defender had to defend the penalty.
Yes.
That got Madrid the points. Now, Buffon was an idiot, and I'm Italian, so now you know, Alan, I'm not only Irish, I got some Italian in me too. Good fellows all the way, Sir Z. But no, in all seriousness, I think Michael Oliver's never responded. He's never recovered from that moment because he was at that point on the ascending. He had done a Champions League semifinal match. He was getting an invitation to that year's World Cup. He's no longer even in the UEFA coefficients. He doesn't even get called up for international games anymore. And he's kind of been passed by Anthony Taylor on like the top of the English list. So I really think Michael Oliver, like, he really fell off. And I just don't think he should be refereeing matches of this level in England. And I know I said this yesterday in Discord, and I said people will kill me for it, and some people disagreed. I would have rathered Anthony Taylor on the pitch yesterday. Because if Anthony Taylor believed that was a penalty, Anthony Taylor's arrogance would have allowed him to point to the spot because he has enough confidence in himself, right or wrong. And I just don't feel that Michael Oliver can do that. And I think that's where the PJMOL has a huge problem because they don't have match officials qualified to match the level of these matches.
But knowing that at the same time, isn't that a little bit of on PJMOL too, Bickler? I mean, knowing what happened last time and the guy left the City game, it was a conversation. Isn't that something that they look on the schedule? And I know they don't want to play the mind games and work it in the schedule, but at the same time, you have to be a freaking realist and make sure you're making assignments that are not going to even open the door for rumors.
That's like the main job, right? Like, yeah. I feel like that's the gig. Like,
the hardest job in officiating, scheduling officials.
Yeah, I know. Like, I don't know. It's like when you guys ask me if I've done the calendar, like the one thing that I have to do. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, I don't know. I was watching that second half more like with like awe, joy, combination, like pride. I was like, man, it was like a joy to watch that team play against the way they play against City, seeing how they can put City in a situation that City normally puts Brentford or somebody in. And I thought that was so impressive. And if the game ends like that, I'm going to be just saying, ah, man, Diaz, hard to get mad at him for all the efforts. But, man, if he finishes one of those, this is like our 3 points that we just lost. But when the game ends like that, I was just more livid. There were a lot of – when I get ridiculously angry, some, like, Turkish swear words find their way in. So like within normally it's English, but then there's also some like Turkish. It's weird how that dynamic works, by the way. When I watch Fenerbahce, I usually swear in Turkish. But when you're really mad, I don't, anybody who has like has a second language worked in maybe any Greek words come into your mind, Victor, as you're cussing people out?
No, I was just I don't even know if this is like accurate. I just picture you smashing a bunch of nesting dolls for some reason.
What the hell is that? That's Russian, by the way.
That's like Russian, right? Like, I don't know why.
I was
like,
just going to say, I'm pretty sure that's a different area here completely.
Because Temujin collects shit and sells it on eBay. I didn't know.
That's a fair point, too. I worked in a Greek pizza place for 5 years between the age of 14. Yeah, between like... Between about 13 to 14, which basically shows you the Greeks will hire anyone at any age, seeing you've got to be 15 and mass to work. It's a great story, actually. I'll tell it real quick. I'd go to this pizza place every day, and I'd play a video game called 1942. And it was a stand-up with the airplanes, right? And I would like I could win for a quarter. Like, I could put in a quarter, and I could win the game. And I'd come every day after school and ride my bike in, and I'm like going into eighth grade. I'm like a senior, freshman in high school. And I show up, it's like the last week of August, and I walk in, and I'm going to play this game. And unbeknownst to me, the owner of the company had the guy who runs the machine jack that thing to, like, the highest level. So before I can get up there, he tells me he'll bet me a quarter. And the whole thing of where this is going is how I learned all the bad words in Greek, because I worked there for 5 years with a bunch of Greek guys. And basically, I went up there, and he said, I'll bet you... I think it was $100 versus your sneakers. No, it was $100. And I'm like, I don't have $100. He's like, then I'll bet your sneakers that you can't beat 10,000 points or whatever. And I was like, bullshit, blah, blah, blah. I'll do it in one quarter, blah, blah, blah. I do it every day. And I'm fucking punching that machine. I'm yelling at things. I'm swearing. I can't believe it. I'm hitting the side of it like it's going to like reset on me or something.
Level the plane in the middle.
And I go to walk out the door. And he's like, hey. Malacca, yeah, come back here. And I go, what? He goes, you owe me $100 or your sneakers. And I was like, well, Gus, these are my brand new school shoes. Like, I can't, no way. Like, my mom, he's like, you don't make bets that you don't pay. That's
was this a pizza place or was it like a cover operation for the mafia?
And I'm not kidding, man. I'm not even kidding.
That's how Galley joined organized crime.
He literally stopped. He stopped. He turned around. He walked to the back of the place and he was like, come with me. And when I got out back, he handed me an apron, a pan, and grease. And he's like, you clean these pans and you get them ready. And for your first, you basically, you're not getting paid until you make $100 to pay me back for this bet. And I worked there for the rest of my high school. The guy really just wanted me to work there. I'd been coming there since I was a little kid. And, like, he just wanted me to work there. But this is the point to the Goodfellas thing. He had to make me think I needed him. And I owed him something. It was how he worked. But this guy lent me money all through high school. If I got in trouble and couldn't call my dad, this guy would come, like, literally help me out when I got in trouble. Like, he was literally, like, one of the really good people in my life. And I learned every single rude swear word that there is in Greek. And as like a 14-year-old young man, I learned a lot about Greek men and some of the things they really, really love in life. And I feel like it prepared me to actually understand how like the mindset worked. No, and it was like one of the best jobs I ever had, actually, because it actually taught me about like so many things in life. But mostly it taught me that if I ever went to Greece, there is a good chance that I will be beaten to an absolute pulp, because I only know words that would like make your hair stand up and insult basically everybody.
I don't know why, like, when you meet someone, that's what everybody wants to learn too. Like, I'll play somebody like on Call of Duty and stuff. They'll be like, you know, my name is like Turk Stallion or whatever. They'll be like, are you Turkish? I'm like, yeah. And then they'll be like, my buddy's Turkish. And then they'll like say a swear word in like a brutal way off way, by the way. And I was like, so that's the only word you wanted to find out from the dude that was your Turkish buddy. But mind you, as Galley was telling the story, I only envisioned Galley as like Costanza trying to save Frogger in that Seinfeld episode. Like, he's trying to get that 1942 a vintage machine back in his basement or something like that. But
yeah, it was so bad. I was so pissed. There was a 1942 in Mortal Kombat, like world domination or something. And we would just play them all day long. wrong. And then literally, then you understand why I stopped gaming. I got tricked into a job, like in a sweatshop at a pizza place because of a video game. And you want me to like go out and buy a PlayStation 5 so I can get my ass kicked by you in FIFA, like, or some other 13-year-old. I have a hard enough time.
If he plays me in FIFA, he's going to have to work at like a kebab place or something for the rest of his life to pay off that debt.
Saraz 2, right up the road when you come visit. You told me that's authentic Turkish too.
Yeah, it looks legit. He sent me pictures of the Turkish restaurant, and I have to give the stamp of approval as a Turk. Like, yep, that looks legit.
See, I didn't ask you for swear words. I asked you if it was worth going to this Turkish place or not, and you were like, actually, that looks like really good stuff. You should check that out. That was the best. Kelly was like, I can't wait till we go there.
Meanwhile, Alan is like, yo, we don't have kebabs, we don't have Greek pizza, but we have the national disgrace referees in England. So let's get back to the game a little bit. In terms of, obviously, we've kind of like talked about the lineup. I mean, so Bickler, in your opinion, it wasn't like availability or anything like that. We wanted to set up more defensively from the get-go.
I think my major problem, I think when I boil it down to this, I have a hard time feeling like, you know, like, I mean, maybe this is managing minutes, but I talked about this with Galley too. It's like, dude, like, do you want to go into this game talking about managing minutes? Like, is that what you want to do in a title race against, like, this is like the game, right? Like, you're going to talk about resting players. Like, it didn't make sense to me. But maybe there's a lot more going on with Robertson we don't know about, you know? You know, I think Galley earlier mentioned the timing of the Mo thing's weird. Like, if he's good enough to go out in a 5-1 win, like, don't you start him here? Like, I think my biggest problem was the fact that, like, I didn't think it was wise to have Szoboszlai immediately inserted into a starting 11 coming off a lengthy period of time off and a prior period before that where he wasn't in great form. You're going to, like, the original lineup had him stacked on the right. Thankfully, he played mostly left. But, like, and then you're going to put Harvey Elliott on top, which we have seen time and time again, doesn't work. It just ends up being another attacking mid that causes spatial problems on that side. And that's what I thought. I thought Harvey was great. I thought it created spacing problems on that side. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't really playing as a front three player. He was more just recessed, almost on a free roam, which is fine. I just didn't think. It's just not what I would have done going out. I thought he got it wrong, and I thought it led to, like, I just thought it led to unnecessary issues that we had in the first half.
Well, before my move to Galley, let me ask you this, Bickler. You think if Konate is healthy, is it only Konate coming for Kwanza? You think the approach changes to that back four? Because my personal feeling was Gomez was back there. The intensity this game required. I mean, you look at that midfield and stuff. I was amazed that midfield lasted, to be honest with you, with the intensity that was required to be able to play against City and make City look vulnerable, literally. You just were not going to get that from Robertson and Mo on a 90-minute basis. That's what I thought. But then the second version was more defensive stability, knowing you have Kwanza in the back. So you put Gomez, and it was like a pretty darn defensive back four.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. I mean, you know, like having Gomez at left back at least tethers another body in an area where Van Dijk can be more help for Kwanza, right? I mean, I guess you could put it that way. Whereas with Robertson, Van Dijk pushes out further to that left side to make up for that room. And then you really isolate Kwanza. And maybe that was like the concern, is they didn't want to be in a situation where Kwanza would be isolated, especially on the break. So that being said, I thought Kwanza was one of the best players on the pitch, like of anybody. Like, I thought he was immense. Like, but, and I think that's the good thing, you know, like I'm talking fairly negatively, but like in all actuality, Endo, McAllister, Kwanza, phenomenal games. I thought Harvey Elliott was really good. Like, there was loads of really good performances. I think the unfortunate thing was there's so many highs and there was a couple of really low lows, right? Like, you know, obviously you got Diaz in there. I thought Szoboszlai looked like the reason that I didn't want him in the starting 11. Like, yeah. And then
what would you start instead of
I would have started Gakpo, and that's a really, really not popular. I understand that.
Yeah, like, no, that's why I wanted to see like what
alternative. Yeah, it's not popular. What I would have done is I would have put Harvey in the midfield, and I would have stacked Gakpo on the right. And I think he can play that right. I know he's used to that left side, but I think what we've seen with him on that right side is that he can do it, and he offers a different dimension, because he's going to drop. He's going to give you an additional midfielder, but he's also going to provide an overlap for Harvey. So I think that's what I would have done. I know it's not the popular play there, but I think that we played Gakpo all over the place to the point where he doesn't know what he is anymore as a player. And I think that Klopp sometimes is so desperate to get players minutes that he sometimes damages them by moving them around in different positions and asking more than they're capable of.
And I don't even know if it's minutes or the fact that they can, and they're the only ones who can kind of like fit into the, we were talking about it this morning show too, about like Gakpo looking lost. And that's probably partially because he's all over the place, and some players, and he's a young kid. I mean, it's not like you're putting Milner all over the place. I've actually been impressed with how Gomez been able to go all over the place. I mean, he's not that young, but he's still relatively young. It's one thing to put, like you say, like a Hendo or a Milner and stuff like that and say, okay, you're here now. You're like, okay, I know my capabilities. I know what I got to do. I know the job. I'll do my best. And I feel like, you know, moving around Gakpo all over the place, that's kind of like, yeah, he doesn't know where the hell he should be. And I think it's because, obviously, due to the injuries, we've had different slots open. And he's the only guy that you can, like, plug into multiple positions and kind of gets hurt because of that. But let's go back to Diaz, because you mentioned that by name. Honestly, like looking at the game, I know Szoboszlai was not good. I thought it was excellent all around, even if the final product wasn't there. Galli, I thought Diaz played like an immense game, along with actually Nunez, in terms of that keeping that intensity and that pressure. If those guys don't do that work up top, that midfield does not look as good as it did.
I completely agree. I was shocked that Nunez got taken off when he did, because I thought he was impacting the game positively. Paul and I talked about this too. Let's see your thoughts on it. Do you think it was a tactical move? Do you think it was minutes restriction? Like, the taking off Nunez with 20 minutes to go in a 1-1 draw, when you're actually getting on the front foot and bringing Mo on, who creates for Nunez more than anyone else, didn't make much sense to me. Like, did you see that as a smart move at that point?
Not necessarily smart. I don't know. When something like that happens, that doesn't really make sense. You're trying to find the reason for it to make sense. And the only way I thought of it was, is we had a lot more possession, and we were going to do a lot more interplay in front of the box, which suits Gakpo a lot more than Nunez. That was the only way I could kind of make it make sense to me. Because, yeah, he is your biggest threat. But in the first half, when we're kind of like they have the ball more, and we're counterattacking, you don't want Nunez on the counterattack. You don't want Nunez chasing a ball that just bounced or something like that.
I mean, of course, right. Like
Silva a couple of times. So I thought that's what it was. Could be a minute thing, but it goes back to what Bickler saying. I think he could have suffered another 10 minutes when it felt like you had City on the ropes. I really think he thought maybe you could get some interplay, because we were basically dominating possession.
That's where I kind of questioned it, honestly. When it was him and not Diaz, especially after the second miss, you know, I think with Diaz, listen, he was really good in the second half. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit, because for all the misses and for the bad touches and for the rough, you know, final third decision making that he had, he never quit. And he kept giving it. And, I mean, that run he takes down the left-hand side, and it got much better for him when Robertson came in, which isn't a big surprise either, because I think he likes playing there when he's there. And it also isn't a surprise that he didn't have Szoboszlai behind him now, and now he had McAllister behind him, and all of a sudden he looked a better attacking midfielder. And I think what Diaz misses more than anything is Curtis Jones. He gave him stability behind him and always did his job. And I just think that with Diaz, those misses were rough, though. Like, we can't overlook the fact that, you know, it took a penalty, and it was a legit penalty, and, you know, probably a second penalty we should have gotten for us to get near the score sheet. And we can't have that. Like, we have to be able to score goals if we're going to win these types of big matches against these big clubs. And, you know, Diaz was the guy. Earlier in the year, we vilified and we slated Darwin for not taking the chances when he was being presented with them right in front of goal, one-on-one with the keeper. And Diaz had that two or three times yesterday, and especially the one where Mo sets him in with what might be one of like the best passes you've ever seen a guy make with the first touch he's been on the pitch.
Yeah.
Like, it is such a good ball. Honestly, and Diaz gets the ball out from under him. He doesn't even need to chip it over the keeper. He can slot it past him. He can try to dribble around him, and he just opens his hips and tries to like chip it. And it just, everything was wrong about it. And for me, that just, that felt like it was his whole day in a microcosm. And I hope he starts to finish these, because I don't want a guy like Diaz, who has all the talent in his toolbox, to be remembered for a guy who can't finish, because he came with the moniker of can do everything but actually score goals. He scores a worldie, but then he misses 10. And he's done that his whole Liverpool career outside of about 3 weeks when he first showed up and he was off the charts good. And, like, I think the same questions that are being asked about Gakpo, I think will start to be asked about Diaz. Like, the energy is great, but you have to have some end product, goals or assists. And too often, I think he still makes the wrong decision in the final third. And it's 2 years in. We're not, like,
yeah, some of the, right, like, the pass, or, like, what I love about him is when he shoots the pass into people sometimes, it's like, dude, like,
yes,
there's no first touch to control that. Jesus Christ. Like, he's, like, 10 feet away from you. You didn't have to shoot it at him. But at the same time, and I understand and I totally agree with him, you know, improving his final product. But is it almost like a double standard at the same time, Bickler, that when Nunez does those things and he has the misses, we said, and I've said, you know, that you got to give him credit for being there, working hard to get into those positions. You're going to make some, miss some. You got to admire the effort. Well, when it happens on Diaz's side, he almost gets only the negatives. Nobody says, hey, the dude ran nonstop all game, and he's there in the first day. He's the one making those runs.
I guess I don't remember it being so positive for Darwin. I believe, you know, I remember it being pretty harsh on Darwin too, you know?
Like, maybe his apologists, I should say. I mean, we said it too, though. We were like, hey, it's going to come. You know, being there is important. You know what I mean?
I guess I can only speak for myself, and my frustration is probably just the duration of time it's been at this point now, where, like, I just feel like he's been off the boil for so long now. And my major problem is not that, like, well, I wish that he would at least get it on frame, right, when he's in front of it. But, like, I think my major problem is the decision-making, right, because I feel like he's single-handedly killing counters, like, by himself. And that is really, really tough to watch, especially when the play seems to be running down his side like it did all first half, right? And so, like, if you're running play down his side and then he's just continually killing it with either a poor first touch or, you know, not shooting when he should be shooting, a touch too many, or trying to turn inside when he should just blow it off down the side. And, you know, like, you know, it seemed like no matter – it's tough to watch a player where no matter what they do, it seems like it's the wrong choice, right? Like, that's tough to watch. And I felt like that's what we were watching with him. And I felt like that you could almost like sense it visibly on him, right? That he could feel that. And so, I've played games where it felt like that. And all of a sudden the ball feels heavier, you know? And like, he just like that, you feel like it's like one of those, like when you have a nightmare and like the thing chasing you is faster than you are, no matter how fast you can run, the game feels like that. I've had matches like that. And that's what it looked like was happening. And that was just really tough to watch. I said with Galli earlier, the thing I did like about him, in credit to Diaz, is like during the second half, I felt like he simplified his game where he just said, all right, I'm going to put this ball in the space and I'm just faster than anybody on the swing.
Yeah.
Like, and like I told Galli, like if I was his manager, if I was his coach, if I was his friend, what I'd be telling him is like, at this point, man, just simplify the game and reduce your entire game down to what made you special to begin with. And that's electric pace. Right. And like, if you could just give me that, like the rest we can figure out. And like, I feel like during the second half, he at least got back to that, where he was just touching the ball in the space, running onto it, and then acting more as a facilitator, which I think is what he needs to do.
But I think, you know, it helps when you have Mo on the opposite side. Not that Mo had a great game, but his presence helps. Because I think, you know, when Mo was gone, I mean, we know as great as Elliott has been, he doesn't have the top speed. He doesn't have, you know, like the
explosiveness. Half a field behind on the back post.
Yeah, we know that. Yeah. Picked up on that.
That's the thing. Because of that, I feel like the entire weight went to the left-hand side while Mo was away. So it's almost like Diaz. To me, I watch a player who feels like he's the one who has to make something happen. It's almost like, you know, NBA basketball and we're playing isolation. It's like, dude, we don't have an offense. Here's the ball. Do something kind of with it. And I think that's not the case, but it feels like that's a guy, like he's playing like that. And I said it during, I think, halftime. I was like, hey, if Mo comes in, Robertson comes in, I mean, that's what really helps him. You were mentioning it earlier, Gally, because he gets that overlap that he does not with Gomez just because he's a right-footed player. And like I say, the entire focus is not on let's stop Diaz now when you have Mo on the left-hand side. Well, as a defender.
Yeah. And you know, this is one, and I agree with that completely. I think that's why those substitutions actually made Diaz look better. And I think that's why both of us gave him credit for not quitting on himself. Because I think you can go into a doldrum there after, let's be honest, as bad as the two back-to-back misses are when he's in on goal, not getting the one in the first half on frame at all and not even making Ederson worse, work might be worse because that one he had Ederson wrong-footed. And if he just puts it inside, that has to be a goal. You are coming in on your strong foot. You are on the left, so you come in on the right and shoot. You have to put that inside the inside post and score goals. Like, that's what Kevin De Bruyne does when he cuts in from the outside and he scores goals. That's what Mo used to do when he used to score goals like that, right? That's what Sadio used to do. Like, you have to score that goal. So, to me, that was almost the worst miss of the whole match. And it wasn't even that he didn't miss. Ederson was wrong-footed, and we had three players in the box. So, if you get any deflection, if you get any keeper, you have to make the keeper make a save, and he kicked it out for a goal kick. And once again, it's like it was just like that was that maddening part, I think, to what Paul's talking about, of killing the counters. It's like when he crosses, he squares the ball when he's supposed to send it down the line, or he sends it down the line when there's a guy wide open, or he dribbles one extra time and then it gets caught under his foot. And you're like, dude, all you had to do was roll the ball to McAllister and he can send Bradley in. Like,
he's overthinking it too because of what went wrong the last time.
And I do think that's it. So I just looked it up. This is what I will say. What I would love was, this is a match where I would have loved a post-match interview with the manager where he actually explained himself, like to say something like, yeah, Robertson felt something this week, so he had to be cautious. Because here's my thing. He played 90 minutes in a 5-1 win in Prague. Why? Why? Why did he have to wear the armband?
That cost us, but I think that was only because we had to take Konate out due to an injury.
But I get it, but 94 minutes and the armband, like you wait, you put the armband on him to start the match. He plays 90 minutes on a Thursday Europa League match when you know you're playing City. Like, we went into a match, and I'm sorry, as good as Gomez has played, there were two or three times where Phil Foden almost ate him alive in the first half on the right-hand side. They were commenting how they were attacking Gomez when he would take a step out of – every time City went forward, and let's be honest – Haaland is great. Kevin De Bruyne is top class. Manchester City's best footballer outside of Rodri is Phil Foden, and it isn't even close. He was the best player on the pitch yesterday for that first half when they were good, and everything good they did. And I honestly think he took Kevin De Bruyne off so Phil Foden could move into Kevin De Bruyne's role because he thought that was the best way to unlock us for a goal. And I just think that not having Robertson start this match, in my opinion, was a big mistake. And if it was injury-related, I'm fine with it. But playing him 90 minutes on Thursday seems like derelict to duties. Because if we lose to Prague over two legs, then we didn't deserve to win the Europa League. We needed our best 11 starting, in my opinion, on Sunday afternoon in the biggest match in 3 years at Anfield since supporters came back in the building. That, to me, is... That's one you can question Klopp. Like, why is Andy Robertson playing in Prague if he can't then start on Sunday at home?
See, which I do agree because, I mean, I think we were all shocked that was a stronger lineup than we thought on Thursday, Bickler. And then I'm looking at now, I mean, Endo played that entire game as well. And Kwanza played that entire game as well. And Harvey did, actually. We were able to substitute Diaz, McAllister, Nunez, and Gomez. And then obviously Konate came out due to an injury. So but the flip side, and I don't know if Bickler, if this would be Klopp's answer, I don't know what you think. He would say, we finished it over there. Now when we go away to Old Trafford, we can be rested because anybody can play on Thursday. All the kids can play. The round is already taken care of.
I guess I would reply to that as I would focus on the City match because you have them coming back to Anfield. You think Sparta is going to – like, I don't know. I just would have taken care of business on the City end first. I mean, that's the one that makes the most sense to me. Like, I think you got to focus on the league. Like Gally said, I think if you can't beat Prague, like, you know, over two legs, especially when they're still coming home to you, I think it just doesn't make sense to me. But it never makes sense to me how strong he goes in comps that are, like, directly before big matches for us. I mean, I think he's such a big – I think he's a really big proponent of match rhythm. And so I think that he is a manager who likes to have these guys consistently playing, even if it's twice a week. And I mean, you know, I think it's been a real battle for him to sort of embrace the concept of squad depth. I think he has because he's seen firsthand what happens when he doesn't, right? Yes. We get players that we don't play. go ahead.
And I think, like, you know, we were talking about this morning as well. I think it has made normally, when we make multiple changes, it looks really disconnected. Like, you know, like he plays the same lineup over and over again. Then there's a League Cup game and everybody looks freaking lost because they've never played before and they never played with the. And I mean, we always said, but anyway, this five never played together off top or anything like that. But I think because of all the injuries and because that he has had to rotate, it feels like everybody is overall more in a rhythm. So you don't get the huge disconnect when you put different people in different places and put a kid in there. I mean, like this whole, when the kids play really well, when we beat Chelsea, everybody's like, these guys have been playing this system since they were, they were playing that system since they were whatever, when we sucked in League Cup games, when we threw the kids out there too, and they look lost. I think the fact that they've been able to get minutes, I mean, if it's 10 here, 15 there, game pace minutes has really helped the squad actually be active, which should really help as we kind of like finish off the season over here. There were some other topics I want to get to, but obviously with the time kind of like rounding off, Gally, let's start with you on this one. Where does this leave you in terms of like the title race mindset? More importantly, let me ask you this, because I've been seeing all different answers on this. City-Arsenal game, which is the best score for us? I thought it was clear cut, but I hear so many different answers that I'm confused.
I mean, I would think if the goal is we're going to win the rest of our games and win the league, then they both just need to drop a point. So if they both drop 2 points in that match and get a draw, to me, that feels like the best result. Like, I mean, for me, that's the best result. They each drop points. I don't know how that's even questionable. I think there's a way you could say, oh, if City could win or Arsenal could win, because I'm not as worried about Arsenal. They have the tougher matchups. Yeah. I do think there are tougher matchups. Don't get me wrong. I still believe Arsenal will find a way to bottle this, but I've been saying that for 3 years, and you know, one of these years I'm going to be wrong.
or not.
I do think that, and I said it to Paul earlier. I think what's a sneaky match for Arsenal is they have to go to Tottenham to play a match that to Tottenham will not only be huge for their top four chances, but an opportunity to make sure that Arsenal doesn't win the league at their home stadium, playing really well in attack-minded football. And I could see that thing end in a 4-4 draw. Like, I could easily see an Arsenal Spurs, and then it'll finish with 10-9, right? And then it'll end 4-4. Like, we could get one of those. I just think that if you're playing the numbers, at this point, you got to feel like you have to win your final 10 matches and hope they drop some points. And what's the easiest way for them to both drop points is to draw against each other.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that seems like logical common sense to me. And I really do not think, looking at all these teams, I don't think any three of them win all their remaining games. Obviously impossible for them to do because they're going to play each other. But aside from that, I don't think they're going to be winning like all their games. Where are you at with this, Bickler?
I think it's interesting that there's like this growing trend for people saying that like City has to beat Arsenal for us to have a chance because of the form that Arsenal's in right now. When really City's the team that historically doesn't lose down the second half of the year. So yeah, obviously I think a 0-0 draw is like that's Christmas. Like, that's what we need. So
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, I did see, and I think it goes back to what you're saying, Gally. People are less afraid of Arsenal, but there's like 10 games left over here. I can understand if this was like 2 months ago and you're like, hey, Arsenal will drop points along the way, but there's freaking 10 games left and they're at the goal differential advantage right now.
I think the biggest thing Liverpool fans should be doing is rooting for Arsenal tomorrow against Porto in the Champions League to make sure they progress so they have these tough fixtures coming up and big meaningful matches midweek. If somehow Porto finds a way to turn over and continue on their 1-0 lead and win this tie, and Arsenal is out of the FA Cup and Arsenal is out of Europe, I think it really then is one of those where, like, Arsenal better not beat City. Because if they pick up those 3 points at that spot and have one match a week, it could be really, really difficult. I think Arsenal needs to stay in Europe, and that will make it a lot more difficult for them moving forward.
See, that's like the odd thing. I thought the same exact thing last year when they were going with City, and I was like, they're going to play Thursdays. It's going to hurt them. So the longer they go in Europe, the worse. And then the moment they went out of Europe, and I guess that's a question, Bickler, and Mateus says the same thing, like dropping out of Europe last year hurt them. Is it so demoralizing that it affected the league and goes back to what we were talking about, Klopp? He's all about like rhythm. Like 3 days, you go out, you win again. You go out, you win again. Did that just get, or because Arsenal was never, did not have the experience of being in a title race, when you sit 7 days and all you think about is the Brighton away game, it makes your life, it makes everything a bit more faster and hectic.
I mean, we can now probably make an opportunistic joke about my terrible memory, but like my memory of it last year was the fact that like I thought them dropping out of Europe was more a symptom of what was going on in that side than the other way around. Like I didn't see that them, like them falling down the stretch was a symptom of like, was because they dropped out of Europe. I more thought they dropped out of Europe because they were struggling. Like that side was struggling in general, you know, like I thought that was like just the first domino. Right. But yeah, I think experience definitely is one thing. I tend to think that more comps is going to hurt them in the long run. Try to figure this thing out. So, I mean, I'm kind of with Gally where like, I want to see that happen. So they continue to have fixtures compile on. I mean, not wishing injuries on anyone, but the more fixtures you have, the more stuff like that happens and the more that hurts your depth and your chemistry and moving players around, and the more that benefits any team trying to beat them.
That's fair. Yeah, I just did not know. I mean, obviously, they have an extra year of experience being in the title race, so it might be a different impact this year compared to what they went through last year. But yeah, it's going to be, I mean, it's a big week in many ways. Obviously, Thursday seems like a foregone conclusion at this point, and then we have the big game on Sunday, but we'll have all week to talk about that. Before we go, and like I say, it's supposed to be, I don't see it. I think this is not going to be official or more news coming out of it probably until the international break. But before we head out, I wanted to get your guys' quick take on like this whole Edwards news. So real quick, Gally, is that good news for you, bad news for you? Like, how do you take that? Because I see some people taking it as we cloned Klopp or something. Like, it's that good of a news? And I see some people almost like worried about it. So where are you at with it?
I don't know how anyone would be worried about the architect who built this dynasty coming back to not only rebuild it, continue to build it, but also to have full control of it. What I will say is I'll apologize in advance for everyone on Facebook who decided, and you know who you are out there on Facebook land, who decided to tag me in posts and start calling for receipts about Jurgen Klopp and Edwards not being on the same page, and this puts an end to that Edwards left because of Klopp, because if he wouldn't come back, it sounds like he's coming back. It sounds like he's bringing his guys back, and the reports are already all the things he didn't like that Klopp made him do.
Wait, you tagged him or he tagged you? I'm confused.
He tagged me, but giving Henderson an extension, Edwards didn't want to do. Giving Milner an extension, Edwards didn't want to do. Even giving Eddie Ward the improved role as sporting director, Edwards didn't want to do. So all these different things that, you know, none of which had anything to do with why Edwards left or why he'd consider coming back. I just find it funny that Edwards has decided to even take. It's not like John Henry didn't have the phone number. The last 3 years, they needed a sporting director. And I'll guarantee if he's offering them the job today, he offered it to him before. Michael Edwards is willing to come back because Michael Edwards is going to hire the coach he won it the first time. Because Michael Edwards wasn't the guy who hired Jurgen Klopp. This is what I've been saying for four years with you guys, and it's going to come to fruition. He's going to get this job, but he will not even – you won't even see him in the press box. He won't be at Anfield until the summer when the clear-out happens. Well, he's coming back to take back over. I don't think him and Klopp don't like each other. I think him and Klopp didn't like working together, and that's okay. But, like, I mean, let's just remember those receipts are coming back, people.
Yeah, that goes back to, I think, you know, obviously being him wanting to be in control because he probably does not want to be in the same situation again. So I can understand that. So it's basically him coming back into the equation. But at the same time, Bickler, I think when I hear, like, when I read people, like, almost concerned about giving too much power to one person, I mean, we have that kind of right now, right? We selected to give that power to Klopp for the time being, and now that he is gone, we're going to the other guy that was the option, is what I see it like. How do you see it?
I just want to make it clear that I did not tag Galley on Facebook.
I don't tag Galley on anything. I try to. I put everything on
private. I was one of the original, like, I was one of the original people that thought that there was a rift between the two of those guys. So that makes sense to me. Listen, here I think it's great that he's coming back. I think if this team is going to turn over in any capacity, the guy that I want turning it over is the guy that helped build it, right? I mean, nobody knows those players better. Nobody knows how to get younger, cheaper, better versions of the players we have, which I think is why there's a real, you know, possibility that players like Diaz are on the block this summer, considering his age. I love the fact he's back. I'm not buying into all of this stuff yet. I want to see what happens. I'd love for him to be back. I don't know how much of the he's going to get full control, I really believe, because I don't know what kind of a manager you're going to get coming in that's going to cede that much. So I think we'll see what happens when we get there. I would love to have him back. Obviously a phenomenal talent from a business mind standpoint and from an architect of, like, can you think of a more like sort of impactful just genius at like squad architecture stuff, like a team builder? It's hard to think of anybody who's really come and done that at that level like he did. So yeah, I would love to have him back.
Yeah, I mean, I take it as good news. And like I say, it goes back to, I think we talked about at the time, there was obviously something was going on. And now you're like, hey, man, he's gone. You want to come back and play? And, you know, and he's back. And I think, yeah, I mean, I trust him, but nothing is official yet. I mean, I know there were a lot of the rumors were saying it would be like this week and stuff. I really don't think it would be in the news until next week during international. So I'm assuming, you know, I'm positive during the international break, we can probably go into it a lot further and talk about it more. But we got, it almost feels like the international break is here. The City game was so big. It feels like, oh, we're over the hill now. It's like the international break, but we got two more games coming up. One of them being real big, obviously on Sunday against United to continue the quad. We'll be talking about that throughout the week. Before we go away, just as a reminder, our Patreon is out and about. And the dollar a month membership, which we have now officially called because of the birth father of Gordon, is Gordon Lee cheap-ass tier at dollar a month is also available. We're issuing a lot of the clips that you would get access to with all the higher tiers as well. We did record some stuff actually yesterday, like some of it came out today. There's more recording being done of new shows throughout this week and an interview coming out as well. So an excellent way to support the site as well as get some of the additional content we have available over there. And like I say, we're going to share as much clips as possible so that you guys at least get a taste of what's to come. But gentlemen, thanks as always, and thanks to all those joining us. Hit all those buttons, share, like, subscribe, go and check out Patreon. You can even be a free member if you wanted to at least get some information on like the shows that are coming up and stuff. But $1 a month in Gordon Lee's tier is not too shabby, so definitely recommend that. But have an excellent week, everybody, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.